Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
90.7 here in the greater Portland metropolitan area. And 91.9 if you're in Points East, 100.7 in Points South and on the web.
KBOO FM.
This is More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
And you, dear listener, are listening to More Talk Radio. Wake up. Get engaged.
This morning, we are pleased to have with us David Corton, who has been a leading critic of corporate globalization and a visionary proponent of planetary system of local living economies. He's also co-founder of Yes, a Journal of Positive Future, and the author of numerous books which are very insightful. His latest book is entitled Agenda for a New Economy, From Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth. And we welcome you, Mr. Corton, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you, and welcome to this part of Pacific Northwest. I know you're familiar with it already.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on KBOO with all my friends down in the Portland area. I actually live up near Seattle on Bainbridge Island.
Yes.
We are in the same ecosystem.
Certainly we are. And let me tell our listeners, because we only have a short time with you here, but on May 30th, you will present a public presentation at 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church in downtown Portland, Southwest 12th and Taylor. The community celebration of real wealth commences at 5 p.m.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to that. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be a great celebration of all the wonderful things that people in the Portland area are doing to rebuild their local economy, what some of us call our local living economies, and to chart a course to the larger future. I'll be laying out the large framework of why this work is so important and how it's part of a defining human moment of decision of what our future course will be, whether it will continue to move toward environmental and social disaster, or whether we're going to capture the opportunity to rebuild community and to create a world that truly works for all by creating an economy that is geared to producing real wealth rather than phantom wealth profits for Wall Street privateers.
Well, you almost answered a question that I had outlined first, and that was you've been quoted as saying that this is an epic opportunity for human beings as a species. And in my words, I paraphrase it by saying to recalibrate our value system, and you pretty much have outlined a lot of it. So what I want to do then, instead of saying all of those little parts, is say the keystone, or I guess the cornerstone, is a new view of sustainability, right?
It's definitely a new view of sustainability, and it's a new view of what the whole purpose of an economy is. It really involves changing just about everything that frames our current economy, from the values to the rules and the institutions and the whether we're concentrating power in global corporations or whether we are reclaiming power for local communities to utilize their own resources in ways that work best for all their people.
One of the things that I think is really fundamental that you've also mentioned is that type of recalibrating of our value system, systems of exchange, whether we use money and, as you've mentioned, phantom money versus real money, what real wealth is. Can you tell us a little bit about what you see as the main value of the economy that you proposed, and then we'll kind of unpack it from there?
Well, if you start out with purpose, the thing that is so extraordinary, we've of course seen it exposed with just stunning clarity in the Wall Street meltdown, that over a long period of history, we humans have moved in the direction of, well, away from relationships that are based on mutual caring and a sense of community. I'm going way back to the our earlier human history of growing up and living in the tribe, in which relationships were fundamental, and of course in the earlier phases there was no concept of money. But we've increasingly moved to a society in which the almost everything we do depends on money, and our relationships are defined by money. So money becomes the defining value of the society. And our lives become focused on acquiring money and making money, and that causes us to lose sight of a fundamental political reality, that we have structured our financial system in a way that gives Wall Street corporations a virtual private monopoly over the creation and allocation of money, which gives them almost total control of the society. And it is so insidious because it is largely invisible. And part of what we need to do is make that visible. Because basically we're at a point now where we need to, if we're going to have a future, we have to declare our independence from Wall Street, very much like our forefathers declared their independence from the King of England and his crown corporations. It's about continuing and completing the democratic transition, recognizing that there's no real political democracy without an underlying foundation of economic democracy.
We're speaking with David Corton, author of Agenda for a New Economy, a fascinating volume which challenges the dominant theme that governs our society. We welcome you to call in and participate with questions for Mr. Corton. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Mr. Corton, you launched your book, Agenda for a New Economy, with an address at Trinity Church right down in the belly of the beach in Wall Street. I was wondering if you could tell us why that was an appropriate place, and how do we combat those forces how may we get beyond Wall Street?
Or dismantle it, as you propose.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head there. I had been committed to speaking at this conference at Wall Street Trinity Church. This is a historic church that you see, whenever you see a picture looking down Wall Street. It's the cathedral right at the end of the street, and it has a history going back to the 1600s. Now, when this financial crash came, I was thinking, I'm going to be giving this talk right in the heart of Wall Street. What a wonderful moment that would be to launch a book that calls for shutting down Wall Street and replacing it with a new money system that is devoted not to making generating huge bonuses for Wall Street billionaires, but rather to actually serve community economies. That led to a project by my publisher and I to get this book out on a rush basis. And what it does, it lays out the big picture of why we got into this crisis, not getting into all the intricate details of the scams, but rather the big picture that helps us see the direction in which we need to move. And it was an amazing experience launching that book on January 23rd, right in the heart of Wall Street, saying, "Bring down the wall, down the wall. Let's create economies that actually serve people, are rooted in community, that recognize that the living planet is the source of all real wealth, and that we in our human communities need to work in partnership with Earth to use all the available resources in ways that are both sustainable and that are geared to meeting real needs, not supporting wars or supporting the extreme profligate consumption of the very wealthy.
So it seems as if you're suggesting that for many of us who have been taught that there are maybe two economic systems, capitalism and socialism, that you are offering something different.
Definitely. That's a very perceptive observation. We're held captive to this existing system by the stories that are perpetuated in the corporate media and in much of academia. that essentially misrepresent our reality. And one of those stories is that the only choice we have is between the capitalist system we have and what we've seen as a failed socialist system of central government ownership and control. Now, of course, if you go back historically, the original definition of capitalism was a system in which a few people own everything to their exclusive benefit and the exclusion of everyone else. And what I'm pointing out, I actually come out of a business school background and studied a lot of market economics. And, you know, as I understood Adam Smith and real market economics, the market is, in fact, a kind of third-way alternative to either the concentration of wealth in the hands of a few capitalists or in the hands of stultifying government bureaucracies. A real market economy, as Adam Smith had envisioned it, looks something more like our local farmers' market, where local producers and local buyers come together and exchange their goods and services. Now, you know, we live in a more complex society than that, and we need more complex systems, but it's quite possible to design economies that work within a framework of rules, which is also essential to a real market economy, that keep the individual players in the market small enough so that they remain accountable to community values rather than morphing into huge global monopolies that are mainly concerned with eliminating market forces so that they can run centrally planned economies, centrally planned by their own management to maximize profits for people who already have money.
Well, that would, when you say changing the rules, it would seem that a certain level of transparency and, for want of a better word, and I'll just risk sounding simplistic, simple rules rather than things that allow for, as you say, the sport of making money out of nothing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we just need to go back to, it's so ironic, is go back to some basic market principles. For example, a market can't work if the firms, if they're dominated by corporate monopolies. It also can't work unless there is a considerable equality in the distribution of income and ownership. You know, the market responds to money, quite literally. And if you've got a few people have all the money, those are the people the market responds to. But if you have the wealth equitably shared so that there's no huge gap between the highest and the lowest earners and an economy in which everybody has a real ownership stake in their businesses and in their communities, the market system works great, but you also need, you know, you need rules to keep the firm small, to keep the distribution of income equitable, and to make sure that everyone is internalizing their prices and not internalizing their costs and not shedding their employment costs onto to society by not providing healthcare or a living wage, or externalizing their environmental costs, and of course our current system is all geared to exactly the opposite, to increasing the concentration of wealth, increasing the concentration of corporate monopoly power, and creating a system in which big corporations privatize their profits, but in a sense socialize their social and environmental costs by passing them on to the larger community. So that, you know, that existing Wall Street-dominated system is a system that is absolutely guaranteed to fail.
To fail and is obsolete. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 here in the city. More talk radio in effect. And if you're listening to what David Corton is saying, then this is familiar information to you. And we'll expand even further on his book and talk about points that he outlines that help us look to the future, an agenda for a workable economy based on real wealth. We're going to go straight to our caller from our conversation about sustainability and let our caller have a chance to speak with our guest, David Corden. Good morning.
Hey, gang. How are you?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm well, and I think everybody should understand how important it is to keep this particular hour, if no other hour, on KBOO alive. And the only way to do this is to dial those magic numbers. But I had a question for Professor Corden, if I may.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to need to check out his Agenda for a New Economy, his new book, and perhaps go to the thing at the end of the month. But a lot of this, as the professor has stated already, is a lack of regulation on papers, chasing papers.
Yes.
and derivatives and securitized. I mean, if they could securitize any little thing, they would securitize any little thing, and became no regulations to the banks, the insurance companies, suddenly this great melding, and the wealthy are getting even more fabulously wealthy. And I know that, but I'm kind of concerned that this potential for carbon cap and trade is more charlatanism, just more shuffling of papers and people getting rich off of thin air. But my question, Professor, is what on earth, if you talk about the potential of it returning to something, part of that has to be actual jobs making things, manufacturing jobs. And how does that fit into this vision for a new a very new economy, maybe old-fashioned, but where do manufacturing jobs fit in?
So caller, you said not only manufacturing jobs, but what kind of products?
All of that.
Okay.
Cecil Celeste, thanks for taking my call.
Yes. That's a great question. What do you think, David?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Of course, it starts, the answer starts with the fact that over the past 20, 30 years, we've been engaged in a process of outsourcing manufacturing and outsourcing jobs, and that's part of what is very much weakened our own economy and built up our enormous debt to the financial debt to the rest of the world, which is weakening the nation on many fronts. Now, at the same time, one could say that gives us the fact we've hollowed out so much of our manufacturing capability gives us an opportunity to rebuild it on a new basis. The basic model I work with is that people everywhere should organize their local economies to the extent possible to meet their own needs and basic essentials in terms of food and energy, finance, and so forth. Now, much manufacturing has to be on a little larger scale than purely the local level, but much of it can be done on a much lower scale, and we need to rebuild that system based on smaller firms that are working in cooperative networks, but also that are committed to producing green products using energy-efficient, resource-efficient methods and full life cycle recycling and reuse. This is where we get back to the idea of the this crash, economic crash, as an opportunity that if we embrace that, we can rebuild on a whole new basis. Now, this of course comes back to why KBOO and other independent media outlets are so important, because if you listen to the corporate media currently, the whole big question is, are we going to be able to revive our save our big banks and revive Wall Street?
Mm-hmm.
They never ask the question of why would we want to save those big banks?
Exactly. As you said, if it's too big to live without, then it's too big.
Yeah, if it's too big to fail.
Right.
It is too big. Any corporation that's too big to fail is too big. And we should be using this as an opportunity to break up these big banks recreate a system of local banks that are owned by local people and they're in the business not of sucking money and wealth out of the community, but rather recycling wealth within the community and supporting the new kinds of industries, real home ownership, to rebuild our local economies on a model of local control, real wealth, green consumption and green production. So KBOO is right at the heart of that, and if not for outlets like KBOO, we would just have no hope at all. But as long as there are voices like KBOO out there, we have the opportunity to change our basic stories, develop our collective understanding of what the real possibilities are at hand, and get on with building a new economy and a new society that actually works for all people everywhere.
As we seek to build a new economy that works for all people everywhere, it requires challenging the systems that exist now. We might be able to say in our economy, this is what we want, this is what we desire, but we come across Wall Street, the banks, and major impediments to real change. If you had the ear of the president, what could he do or those national leaders do to alter the direction?
Well, they need to use this as an opportunity to advance the restructuring. Now, here's where we get into a political reality. In my view, President Obama is probably the smartest, the most emotionally mature, the most visionary president that we have ever had, but he is up against enormous counter forces. It's been so stunning to me that, for the most part, his response to Wall Street, which is very different than the stimulus package, which is pumping in money more at the community level, but the response to Wall Street in terms of trying to deal with the financial crisis by pumping more money into the banks that created the problem is scarcely distinguishable from that of George W. And what that means to me is that the political power, the political strength of Wall Street is so strong that he's very limited in what he can do, partly because Wall Street also controls so much of the media, and in a sense, I think he's moving interestingly in a cautious way. Like just this morning, lead story in the New York Times was about changing the rules in antitrust, essentially reviving antitrust and taking seriously the limitations on concentrations of corporate power. Now, that's an essential move, hopefully he is going to be bringing these things in step by step. But what we have to realize as civil society and as citizens is the political reality that he works in, and so in a way, it's less important what I tell him to do than what... than the conversations that we're having right here at the community level on our need not only to take back our own economic lives in our community, but we also have to be mobilizing and, quite frankly, getting out on the streets to demand that he, in terms of dealing with the financial system, that he actually focus on shutting down Wall Street and creating a whole new money system to replace it that's based on a very different design and that is responsive to real community needs and supporting the development of real wealth. Because there's no way he can take the actions that are necessary in terms of dismantling Wall Street without enormous pressure coming from citizens.
Enormous support from us, basically.
Yeah, the outrage out there.
The people.
From the people. The outrage against Wall Street is very real. It is very deep. It's very extensive. But it has to be translated into a powerful political message.
So what I want to do is I want to tease people and entice them to get the book, but at the same time bring out some really important points you make. And one of them is what people really want. So this is a perfect time for us to say, okay, you said that we need to galvanize our energy or force so that we can tell our leaders what we want. What do we want?
Well, it's interesting. We get so confused and distorted by so many messages out there. But if you really reach down and have a serious, candid conversation with people, what people want is opportunity for their children. They want secure homes and strong families and jobs that pay a living wage. They want to have a healthy environment. They want to have a strong, caring community where they feel that they're a part of it and have an opportunity to be a productive contributor to their community. The thing that, you know, it's, the thing that's so amazing to me, is that, you know, I've lived and worked all over the world in Ethiopia and Central America and Southeast Asia, and been part of many international organizations and movements. And it's so stunning once you really get down to the core of it, beyond all the wondrous cultural differences, you know, we're all in the end human beings, and we're all basically wired the same way in terms of our desire for community, our desire for peace, for nonviolence, for caring communities and strong families. But of course, we've been conditioned and trained over time to believe that that it's actually our human nature to be violent, to be greedy, to be individualistic, and so forth, which are all values that work well in terms of service to Wall Street. But we lose sight of the fact that, yes, we have these capabilities as humans, but these are signs of pathology. These are signs of psychological breakdown, psychological deficiency, that mature, healthy human beings are caring, caring human beings. They are nonviolent. They are contributors to the life of community. They recognize that yes, we're important as individuals, but also our individual well-being depends very much on the well-being of the larger community. So we need to recapture these. You know, you talked about basic values at the beginning, and that's part of the basic values. That's also part of really coming to understand who we are, what we are, and what we really want as a species. And this is what's so wonderful about this moment, that if you step back and look at it, what we need to do, what we need to create in terms of our societies currently, are exactly the societies that most healthy human beings over millennia have dreamed of. And this is our opportunity, because the old system is so clearly failing.
In this opportune moment, we want to remind you that you can continue the conversation with David Corton on May 30th, when he'll speak at the First Baptist Church at Southwest 12th and Taylor at a community celebration of real wealth. It commences at 6 p.m. Co-sponsor in part by KBOO-FM, and for more information, you can go to realwealthpdx.com. But as we continue our conversation with Mr. Corton, as we delve into how to establish a new and better society, we want to encourage you to call in here at 503-232-8818 or 1-800-1-877.
You were close.
Yeah,
1-877-500-5266. And make a pledge. And then to share the conversation, I know that it is our membership drive, and we are exhorting and encouraging people to become members. But we also are encouraging an opportunity to talk with David Corton prior to his visit here in Portland, and to bounce some of your ideas and thoughts that you've had about the economy. The ideas that he's saying, that David Corton is saying, are ideas that all of us have had at one point or another when we kind of shake the sleep out of our eyes, the media and corporate induced sleep out of our eyes, and say, what do I want? What should be happening? Because this isn't working. Well, give us a call, 231-8187, and share your thoughts and your ideas with David Corton about what the agenda for a new economy should look like.
We're speaking this morning with David Corton, author of Agenda for a New Economy, a fascinating book. He'll be in town May 30th. You have an opportunity to speak with him right now. Call 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller.
Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. I'm listening to the conversation, and when you talk about Wall Street and the greed that Wall Street is about, when you talk about and compare that to a new economy, most of what I see is about regulation. And I'm wondering, how do you feel about, like, that aspect of saying, you know, can we make it without regulation? Because we can't regulate 100% of the economy. So how do you change those attitudes about how we as individuals spend in a new economy?
Well, you certainly raised an important question. The foundational shift has to be a shift in values of recognizing that the purpose of an economy is not to make money for rich people. It is to facilitate the productive activities and exchange of a green real wealth economy rooted in community. So that's the value frame, and we started that through conversation. Then the other piece is recognizing that markets, just like every other aspect of life, need rules, because not everyone is responsible and committed to the larger well-being of the community. So there are going to be people with criminal tendencies, and you need a fair and just transparent legal system to deal with that. And we need those kinds of rules, particularly in a way for people on Wall Street, which seems to have gathered together one of the greatest concentrations of criminal activity that we've ever experienced.
So David and caller, one of the things I hear, if I understand the caller correctly, is that we want to make sure we don't have rules that are prohibitive for business. But if I understand you correctly, and to go back to Chapter 7, when you're talking about the high cost of this illusion of wealth, this phantom wealth, is that not only does it create psychological issues, but we need a language that says money means the same thing to everyone, that the rules are the same way for everyone, so that anyone with integrity and a sound plan can enter the market.
Absolutely, and of course, particularly can enter the market at the local level, can have the opportunity to start their own bakery, their own restaurant, even their own credit unions and banks, their local farms, their local food processing, all the things that we need to recreate at a local level. Now, what we have currently are rules that facilitate all the wrong things that make it difficult for people to start their own businesses at the local level. So this, it's not that we don't have rules, but we have
the wrong rules.
We have the wrong rules. Rules that facilitate the monopolization of intellectual property rights and technology, rather than the sharing of information and technology. So these are all things that we need to look at. We have rules that at the global level that prohibit national and local governments from making rules that constrain certain kinds of corporate behavior. Mm-hmm. Those rules need to be changed. I want to just be sure to get in here. You mentioned I'm connected to Yes Magazine. I'm the co-founder and board chair of Yes, and I want your listeners to know that Our next issue, which is just now coming out, is on the new economy, and I think it's one of the most stunning issues that we've ever put out, because it is about what we need to do to rebuild our local economies, to restructure our money system. There's article by Vandana Shiva on the lessons from Gandhi. There's a wonderful article by Rebecca Adamson from the Native American community on age-old wisdom and how that provides a foundation for rebuilding our local economies. There's
excellent
stories about local banks, cooperatives, local currencies. One that going back to the parallel with the Great Depression and the New Deal, and we always talk about Roosevelt bringing the New Deal. This article by Sarah Anderson talks about what was the role of citizen movements and the progressive movement in demanding those changes to offset the Wall Street power. So I urge your listeners also to be sure to look for that this new Yes issue.
Sounds like an excellent issue. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller. Pam.
Hi. First of all, Mr. Corton, thank you so much for agreeing to speak on KABU, and thank you, Cecil and Celeste, for doing this. I have a question, however, which is a little bit different. I'm wondering, David, if you would please give us your opinion of the effect, if any, of militarism on our economy and what we might do to change that if you think it's necessary. And I'm going to take your answer off the air.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Very good question. You know, we're so often told that if if we're going to cut back consumption and save the planet, which is the same as saving ourselves, it's going to entail enormous hardship. I reject that claim. I think we have an opportunity to improve our lives in most every way. And one of the key issues here is, you know, it's a question of how we allocate our resources. And you know, this is a moment that we need to recognize that that war is an outmoded human institution. Quite apart from moral considerations, we simply cannot afford it anymore. And there is no justification for the United States getting involved in overseas wars. Our most dangerous political opponent small dispersed networks, terrorist networks that, you know, we even know from military science that responding to those networks with conventional military force only increases the problem because it facilitates the recruitment of more terrorists, as we have been so so tragically learning the last few years. You know, this is a time to end war and to basically shut down our military establishment and reallocate all of those precious resources to meeting the real needs of people in our communities. And I think this is this is an important issue for the peace movement. It's not just about ending a particular current war. It is about declaring peace and shutting down the military establishment and converting to a true peace economy.
Thank you, David, for not only delving deeply into the way that we can create a new and sustainable economy by remembering what we'd learned before, but getting the word out to people. I think that's the most important thing. I'm really glad that you're coming to town here. When you come to town and you talk to people in the community, what are some of the, I say, more interesting things that you hear people say in terms of understanding what you're offering by dismantling the current economy and creating one that actually values people and relationships?
Well, it's so interesting. There's such a hunger in our society for a sense of community, to break the individual isolation, to have a sense of being part of a group with a larger positive purpose, not engaging war with some phantom external enemy, but rather a common cause to build a community that really works. One of the things I find most exciting are some of the efforts to bridge our racial divide by bringing together our different racial and ethnic communities for conversation to arrive at a common vision of how best to build our communities in ways that work for everyone. And I know that's one of the agendas of the sponsor of my presentation. But I'm also, I'm very struck by the number of young people I run into who are going back to the land, that want to be small local farmers and be part of rebuilding the local food system. I know there's a movement in Portland to encourage people to put their money where their life is, take it out of their deposits in the big Bank of America, Citibank branches, and so forth, and put it into local banks and credit unions that are actually serving their communities. There, of course, are all the initiatives around clean energy and solar energy and retrofitting our houses, the the green building movements, the thing that that Portland is so famous for around the world in terms of your smart growth issues and mm-hmm. trying to define growth boundaries in ways that stop the suburban exurban sprawl and concentrate populations in centers that are better served by mass transit. All of these things are moves toward the new economy we need to create. And one of the things that excites me about coming to Portland is that in so many ways you and Portland are the pioneers leading the way in so many of these areas and setting an example for the rest of the world. And I assume that's partly due to the contribution that KBOO has been making to the community for so long.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to your visit here on May 30th when you will speak at 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church in downtown Portland. We've been speaking with David Corton, who is the author of Agenda for a New Economy, a great read, and we look forward to seeing you in a few weeks, Mr. Corton.
Yes.
Okay, look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
Thank you.